the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to a Friday. We made it to the end of another week, although as we've learned, just because it's 3 o'clock Eastern, as I turn on the microphone here, the week's not over yet. So much happens in this White House after hours, shall we say. It seems like Friday afternoons at 4 or 5 o'clock, they like to break news. Although there was a lot of news broken all this week, and it's one of the things that had me feeling a little down today, feeling like I'm doing you a disservice because I can't adequately keep all the stories aligned in my head. There's just so much going on. And even in assigning importance to each story, like where they should come in the What's News report. Usually you lead with the big story of the day. Well, there's so much and it's all a big jumble of chaos. That's the word. It's chaos. I think the big story still is the trade, the tariffs that Trump decided to put in place yesterday. By all accounts, spur of the moment because he's angry and he's coming unraveled. You know, I hear this term, he's coming unraveled. He was never raveled to begin with. So I don't know how one becomes unraveled when the starting point is I think of it in terms of a ball of yarn, and it's just loose yarn everywhere. There's nothing raveled there. So how does something unravel from the point of already being unraveled? Oh, that's sort of the graphic image of inside my brain at this moment. I read a couple of tweets from Kyle Griffin, who's a producer over at MSNBC. And first, he writes, Trump's decision to launch a trade war was born out of anger at other simmering issues, including treatment of Jared and a broken internal process, two officials told NBC News. On Wednesday evening, Trump became unglued, in the words of one official. Then he writes, there were no prepared, approved remarks for Trump to give on trade and tariffs, NBC News reports. There was no diplomatic strategy, legislative strategy, communications plan. No one at the following departments had been told about the policy: State, Treasury, or Defense. It's pretty insane. And in fact, as I was simmering over this, trying to figure out how do I get through the first few minutes of the show, what the hell do I talk about? A friend sent me a segment from last night's Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and Jeff Daniels was the guest. Here's a little bit of what they discussed.
Like today, so many things happen in a single day now that it's very hard to keep track of the thing that's actually making your jaw drop.
Oh my God, it's like an episode of the Kardashians is like normal. I mean, this is just, it's like binge watching something that changes. If it were a Hollywood script, you would get notes on it. You would get people from the junior executive upstairs going, you can't have his daughter be in the White House. It just doesn't work.
I think that's against the law.
The son-in-law looks like the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz. We can't have that. Mm-hmm. Bannon looks like he eats out of a trough. You just can't have
Don that. Jr. looks, for some reason, he KYs his own head. Why is this?
There's KY.
Is he trying to fit himself through a keyhole? Why is he so slippery looking? I don't understand.
President Bonespurs, Thursday at 8. Yeah.
We had Omar also on last night, and she laughed a lot at the things that frightened me. And I think that there are a lot of people who are leaving the White House who want kind of their card to polite society back. They want to come out and go, I just wasn't. I think they know that the hammer's coming. They're like, I was out before any of that happened.
What? Seriously, what they did to get him into that office, forget the Russians. I mean, we lost, as a country, we lost respect, decency, civilized behavior, integrity, class, accountability, responsibility. He's got none of that. He's got none of that. Yeah. And you look for people to be leaders. This is not only the, you know, the free president of the free world and all that, but my God, this is the opposite of what any country would need, just as far as human beings, you know. So I just get him out of here, back the truck, throw him in the back of the truck, and take him away somewhere.
Right. Is the thing about FDR said that the presidency was essentially a moral position. And to have that, you have to have principles to which you are tethered. And he really seems like, you know, wet finger in the air to see which way the wind is blowing. And I don't want to know why the finger is wet.
Ew. No, I don't
just
either.
I don't want to know
that either. That's kind of gross. There's a piece up. There's a few articles that I found. One, an op-ed from Jennifer Rubin, her Right Turn blog at the Washington Post. Trump's calamities are coming faster and in bunches. That I found. And then there was another piece up at CNN.com written by Gloria Borger. The headline on that one reads, "The Great Unraveling. Trump's allies are really worried about him." And she talks about, she gives a brief summary of the last couple of weeks and what has happened to make him, to put him in this frenzy where Trump's allies are really worried about him. Here she writes a brief summary. The Rob Porter wife abuse scandal and the resulting security clearance scandal in which the president's son-in-law gets his clearance downgraded. Then the president yet again attacks his attorney general. The AG fights back. The president fumes. Meantime, he's also fuming at the free-spending cabinet official scandals, the unseemly expenditures brought to you by Trump's version of the best and the brightest, see Ben Carson's dining room set. Then consider these odd developments. Trump agrees with Democrats on gun control in a public session. Then he takes on Republicans and some of his own economic team by proposing steel and aluminum tariffs. His career ambassador to Mexico quits after President Peña Nieto cancels a trip to the United States following a bad phone call, build the wall, with the president. His communications director, Hope Hicks, a loyal longtime aide who provided his, quote, emotional support, according to one source, resigns. And one friend predicted to me this would likely send the president into a tailspin. Consider that box checked. Oh, and the Russia probe continues, with former Trump campaign aide Rick Gates flipping to cooperate with the special counsel, who is asking questions about Trump's Russia connections, among other uncomfortable things. And in the midst of all this tumult, the president announces the hiring of the man to run his 2020 re-election bid, because why not? The president is stewing, she writes, according to one source with knowledge, blaming everyone but himself for the tumult. His chief of staff, General John Kelly, for mishandling the clearance issue, Jeff Sessions for recusing himself from the Russia investigation, Republicans for being afraid of the NRA, Democrats for obstructing everything. So the president has gone rogue, writes Gloria Borger, which is not a healthy development. Morale is as bad as it's ever been, says another source familiar with the situation inside the White House, echoing the comments of Anthony Scaramucci in a CNN interview on Thursday. What's more, the source lamented, the good people are being driven crazy. That almost goes without saying. Multiple sources report an increasingly isolated Trump, cordoned off from old friends by Kelly, getting the cold shoulder from wife Melania after Stormy Daniels and friends, increasing friction with his daughter and son-in-law over clearance, and home alone without longtime bodyguard friend Keith Schiller and Hicks. His economic team is split over tariffs. His national security advisor, according to reports, will be replaced soon. No doubt the exodus will continue. And the president, who has bullied Jeff Sessions regularly since the summer, is now furious that the attorney general has dared defend his department against a president who called it disgraceful. A man who prides himself on his instinct to counterpunch finds it shocking when someone punches back. Oh, the irony of Trump. Some of these things don't bother him like they do other people, offers another old friend, trying to explain the chaos, or at least how Donald Trump regards it. That may be true. Maybe this great unraveling doesn't bother him, but it should bother us. And it does. That's the thing. It if you have any kind of conscience or any kind of morality about the way this country is going, it should bother you. And maybe that's, you know, again, the discomfort I felt as I was getting ready to start the show today, feeling that I can't adequately bring to you what's going on. But I'll tell you, I'll do my best. And that's the best that I can do. Today on the show, an old friend, Joel Silberman, is back. Now, Joel Silberman used to be a regular weekly guest on the program. We would talk every Monday before I got sick. Joel is a media trainer and strategist. He works with candidates and political figures in teaching them how to navigate the waters of media and how to talk effectively on television. And, same for politicians. He's worked with some of the best of the best. He produces big events, and he is a progressive to the nth. And of course, then I got sick. I was diagnosed with lung cancer, and it took me off the air for a while. And then I came back on this abbreviated schedule. Joel was on with me. He was busy. And then Joel got sick. And in fact, the last time he was on with us, he told us that he had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And I got to tell you, I know of nobody who can handle something like that better than Joel Silberman. And the way he's been dealing with it is remarkable. He's got a Facebook group called Team Joel. You can join it at Team Joel on hashtag Team Joel on Facebook. And it's the way he keeps thousands of people updated, frankly. But Joel is down here in South Florida for the week. I think they're looking at properties, which is a wonderful thing. And he heads back up to Washington, D.C., hopefully after the storm ends, to participate in a clinical trial. But I'm going to let him tell us all about that, give us an update on how he's doing. All I know is every time I talk to Joel Silberman, he makes me feel better. So hopefully he'll do that for all of us. So we'll take a time out. We'll listen to What's News, and we'll come back on the other side with Joel Silberman next on The Nicole Sandler Show, NicoleSandler.com, and on the Progressive Voices Network. I read the news
today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The federal government is closed in the D.C. area on Friday due to weather as a powerful nor'easter lashes the northeast with destructive coastal flooding, winds, and heavy snow. On Thursday, the president announced his plans to impose new tariffs on steel and aluminum imports.
We'll probably have everything completed by next week. We'll be imposing tariffs on steel imports and tariffs on aluminum imports, and you're going to see a lot of good things happen. You're going to see expansions of the companies. I know that, David, you said you'd be expanding. Tim, I know you said you were expanding. You're
absolutely
all, pretty much all of you will immediately be expanding if we give you that level playing field, if we give you that help. And you're going to hire more workers, and your workers are going to be very happy. And again, what's been allowed to go on for decades is disgraceful. It's disgraceful. And when it comes to a time when our country can't make aluminum and steel, and I will tell you, you almost don't have much of a country, because without steel and aluminum, your country's not the same. And we need it. We need it even for defense, if you think. I mean, we need it for defense. We need great steel makers, great aluminum makers for defense. So we'll probably see you sometime next week. We'll be signing it in, and you will have protection for the first time in a long while. And You got to regrow your industries. That's all I'm asking.
A day after Trump held a bipartisan meeting on gun control and seemed to side with the Democrats on measures including more stringent background checks, raising the age for purchases, and more, Trump met with the NRA in the Oval Office and signaled to them that he had cooled on his plans. Chris Cox, executive director of the NRA's lobbying arm, tweeted that he had a great meeting with Trump and VP Mike Pence, further saying that both, quote, support the Second Amendment, support strong due process, and don't want gun control. It wasn't that long ago that Trump boasted about the size of his nuclear button. Now Russia's Vladimir Putin is getting in on the act. In the midst of a pre-election speech about the economy, Putin changed his focus to nukes.
But suddenly, the tone of the speech changed, and Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, started talking about these new, what he called, invincible missiles that have been tested in recent months and are now basically in service, or at least have been developed to the point that they can be used, including a hypersonic missile, a missile that travels many times the speed of sound, that can outpace the U.S. Missile Defense Shield, which is so maneuverable that the U.S. Missile Defense Shield cannot keep up with it. He also spoke about drones that have been developed, underwater drones that are capable of carrying a nuclear payload, and all sorts of other, you know, quite extraordinary military technology, obviously designed to sort of provoke some patriotism in the hearts of those who were watching this speech, not just in the parliament, but around the country as well, but also designed, I think, to deliver a message to the United States. And he made very clear that the path to developing this technology happened over the past couple of years. He said it was essentially a response to the deployment of the U.S. Missile Defense Shield in Eastern Europe and various other military developments in the U.S. He said this: they didn't listen to us then, listen to us now. So a kind of, you know, not so veiled warning to the U.S. not to mess with Russia and its new kind of terrifying arsenal of nuclear weapons.
An animation video of the Russian nukes showed missiles appearing to strike Florida. Trump held a White House summit on the opioid crisis on Thursday, an event the administration billed as a way to measure its progress in combating the nation's drug problem. He suggested that executing drug dealers could help solve the crisis.
We have drug dealers that don't, I mean, they kill hundreds and hundreds of people, and most of them don't even go to jail. You know, if you shoot one person, they give you life, they give you the death penalty. These people can kill 2,000, 3,000 people, and nothing happens to them. And we need strength with respect to the pushers and to the drug dealers. And if we don't do that, you're never going to solve the problem. If you want to be weak and you want to talk about just blue ribbon committees, that's not the answer. The answer is you have to have strength and you have to have toughness. The drug dealers, the drug pushers they're really doing damage. They're really doing damage. Some countries have a very, very tough penalty, the ultimate penalty. And by the way, they have much less of a drug problem than we do. So we're going to have to be very strong on penalties.
In the midst of all of this, Trump was up early Friday morning tweeting before 6 a.m.
Around 5:45 a.m. this morning, the president tweeted, Alex Baldwin, A-L-E-X, Alex Baldwin, whose dying mediocre career was saved by his impersonation of me on SNL, now says playing DJT was agony for him. Alex, it was also agony for those who were forced to watch. You were terrible. Bring back Daryl Hammond, says the president, much funnier and a far greater talent. All right, so he deleted that tweet about 20 minutes later and sent out one that properly credited Alec Baldwin, had no spelling errors, tightened up the copy just a little bit.
And that's a bit of What's News for Now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com. And now it's time to cut through the media bullshit with Joel Silberman of DemocracyPartners.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, As I told you before, Joel Silberman was a regular guest on this program for a long time before I was out on hiatus after I got sick. And he's one of the people I get asked about most often from the old days of the program. And I'm thrilled to welcome Joel Silberman, media strategist and trainer, back to the program today. Hello, Joel.
Hello, Nicole. I am thrilled to be back.
And it's great to have you down here. You're actually in Fort Lauderdale as we speak, which is a good thing because there's a big honking storm up north. D.C. is shut down today.
Timing is everything.
Yes, it
and
is.
And I have to say that I'm thrilled to be here. Florida has lived up to its name, the Sunshine State, and I have had a great time in the sunshine.
Well, that's good.
It's been grand.
It's healing. And I was talking a little bit earlier about the last time you were on the program. I can't believe I think it was June the last time you were here. And you told us of your diagnosis. And I get more questions about how you're doing from listeners than really about anybody or anything else. So you want to fill us in on what's happening with you?
Well, I'm doing very well. I feel excellent. I have no symptoms, despite the fact that I am in stage 4 metastatic pancreatic cancer. Now, the good news, they shrunk my tumor so much that I had a Whipple procedure, which just means that I met Mac the Knife and I wasn't singing and had my insides rearranged, which is how they deal with pancreatic cancer. And they got the whole thing with clean margins. But about, I guess it's 6 weeks after that, they discovered that the pancreatic cancer had reappeared. Mm. And that meant I had metastatic pancreatic cancer. That's the bad news. Again, the good news, that meant I qualified for a clinical trial of a new immunotherapy drug by Bristol Myers Squibb, and I can't believe I'm saying that I'm rooting for a drug company,
right?
Because as all of you that know me know, that's not somebody I'd be rooting for. However, I am this time because they've had this drug out and it is done well with other cancers. They've modified it to approach pancreatic, and I believe I have a very good chance for remission. So Monday, when I go back to Baltimore, we begin the process of a clinical trial. And that's where I am. I'm very optimistic. I am positive, and I'm grateful.
Your attitude of gratitude is really what gets me. As I said, you make me feel better every time I talk to you. You've managed to keep this great attitude going. And I guess, you know, that's the choice that you can make, is you take it on with that attitude or you let it defeat you. And you're not the kind of person who lets something like this defeat you.
Well, when I consider the reality is that in life, always the only thing we can control is our attitude. We can't control our circumstances. They are the circumstances. We can control how we react to the circumstances. And that's always been how I've lived my life. So this is no different. I just feel like it's the only attitude. I'm grateful that I have Medicare. I'm grateful that I live in a country where progressives repealed the Marriage Act that didn't allow me to marry my husband. So I married him, and we have great secondary insurance because of that. I'm grateful that I have all those things. At the same time, I'm an activist for everybody that doesn't have all those things, because it's about time we saw universal health care. It's about time that we said to the insurance companies profiting off of people's sickness, this is not your profit center. Your profit center can be elsewhere, but not here. And I'm actively campaigning for that every day, because I know how it's saving my life and saving Michael and I from being bankrupt.
Right. You know, I never thought I'd wish for the day that I'd get to 65, but at only 58, I'm just a spry young thing. I've got years to go before I get on Medicare. I'm good for this year, for 2018, but I've still got that stress hanging behind me going, what's going to happen in 2019? There's no guarantees that I'll even be able to get insurance.
I know it.
Millions
of others. That bothers me the most. I know people in your boat I know so many people that I read about every day, and it really bothers me. This is the richest country in the world, and this is not what we should be having here.
No. No. And so it's something we keep fighting for. Now, in addition to your fight against against cancer, you've remained active. You're still working and producing events and training people. And so what are you up to now? What's going on in your life?
Well, 2 weeks ago, I trained a class of 20 amazing progressives for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, PCCC. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, these progressives are going to win. I worked with Rand Bryce, who is running against Paul Ryan.
Awesome.
An iron worker, a blue collar man, and I think he'll win because Paul Ryan forgot that he's from Wisconsin, mm-hmm. along the other things that Paul Ryan forget. I trained so many amazing candidates, people that will win their races, people that we will see in Congress, people that will be looking at old congressional people and saying the words that so many people in Congress need to hear. Thank you for your service. Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out.
Right.
Because it's time. It's time. I've seen it. I really feel as though young people can't possibly vote for people that don't look like them. And we have to start dealing with the reality of what the Democratic base looks like and who they are. Because, you know, when we keep trying to convert people that will never vote for us, rather than go out and get the 36% of people that didn't vote in 2016 mm-hmm. because they couldn't hold their nose or because they didn't see any difference in the candidates, and I defy those people today, looking at a White House that is truly imploding, to say there's no difference in the candidates. But we need to go out and get them. We need millennials. I mean, look what's happened in the town next to yours.
Yep.
Millennials are actually leading. And when we hear that fabulous young woman call BS, I'm warning the congressional leaders every day that unless they start doing something, people will call BS on them.
It feels like a groundswell, at least on this one issue. And that's all it takes sometimes is one issue to get the ball rolling. And there couldn't be a more important one. I don't know if you heard. There have been already today, I think, two more shootings. There was one.
Yeah, I heard.
In Detroit, and another one. It's insane. We've got to get a handle on this. And it is the young people who are standing up and making noise so eloquently and beautifully as well. You must cavil when you see them.
Well, there's a young man named David, I believe it's Hogg, H-O-G-G.
Yes.
I saw him on Reliable Sources, and he had Dan Rather and Brian Stetler speechless.
Wow.
And finally, Brian Stetler said, "How are you this eloquent?" And he said, "Well, I'm in debate class, and as a part of the debate team, we have to research and we have to make our argument." It was brilliant. This was not some boy speaking with valley speech. I didn't hear one, you know, or one like, or one He was eloquent, he was elegant, and he was plain spoken.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. And I'm using him to play because this weekend coming up, a week from today, I will be addressing the Progressive Caucus Center's Strategy Summit, and I'll be talking to 30 members of Congress and a whole lot of organizations. And I'm going to tell them point blank that they are being shamed by adolescents for seizing a media narrative, for making an issue important by speaking their values. That's what they're doing, and it's fantastic.
It is. No, they're truly inspiring. The young woman that you mentioned, who called BS, her name is Emma Gonzalez. She went from, she was never on Twitter, And she started a Twitter account. She's now surpassed, you know, a lot of the people who are giving her a hard time, the NRA and Dana Loesch and those. She's got over a million followers now. And she started something. I am so proud of these young people. And it makes me think a little bit better of the Florida school system, of which I was not too impressed before.
You know, it's funny. I've just spent a week in your lovely state. And you and I have talked about Florida as Florida.
Yes.
And it's been very interesting to be here in Fort Lauderdale and see a different Fort Lauderdale than I saw 25 years ago. I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing. I've enjoyed so much being in Florida that we're actually looking at buying a home here.
Wow.
Because it is a spectacular place to be. But these children are telling us something else. They are media savvy. This is the product of having smartphones in your hand from a young age, having chips in your brain because you're the generation that has inherited all of this. They have more information, and all they need really is the motivation and rallying cry to use that rather than sit still. And when their life, literally their life, is in danger, they got plenty of motivation. And I think we've seen that now in a way that I haven't seen since we fought for marriage equality.
Right.
That's the last time I saw a movement move quickly.
Right. Well, what encourages me, see, Parkland is a very upscale area. There's a lot of money there. And these people, obviously benefit from that as well, you know, in terms of having a great school. With the resources that help them to get this great education they got. What I'm encouraged about are all the other schools in the state that have, you know, glommed on, that are doing marches, that are walking out, that are participating around the country. This march they're going to have on March 24th. I mean, the fact that these kids spearheaded that and are inspiring other high school kids around the country to participate is enormous. That's what gives me hope, more than just Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, which I would expect it from, given the resources of that area. But seeing the neighboring towns come in as well is encouraging.
Well, you're right, because this is an actual poster for public education.
Mm-hmm.
That we have the ability, let me put it to you this way, we have the ability to give our kids a great education all over this country if we seize the opportunity. We're not going to do it on this administration's idea of just giving money to the rich through tax cuts, mm-hmm. because that's where schools get hurt, is when that happens, because communities that aren't as wealthy as Parkland will be hurt in their school budgets. But you know, I donate every month to something called Donors Choose. And Donors Choose was started by Charles Best to help teachers who are putting money out of their pocket every day so that children can have everything they need in their schools. I have a personal passion, which is music education. So I have bought keyboards for school systems,
wow.
around the country, for choirs to practice on and for children to have really good instruments, because I believe in it. But again, it shows me that America is a generous country, that we're basically a progressive country, not a center-right country. We are not a selfish country the way the NRA and the conservative minority would like us to feel. We are people that care about each other. And we need now more than ever to demand the media report those stories, demand that the media shows us for who we are, not for who's going to make them the most money by monetizing rage.
Right. Although, you know, here we veer into the world of media, which is, your expertise, Joel Silberman. And since we spoke, I don't know if we ever spoke about what's happening with the media, with Sinclair Broadcasting, with the takeover of what's left of the media. We've lost so many progressive voices on the airwaves. Of course, Air America went away almost a decade ago. And we're left with ragtag little shows, you know, like mine on the internet and some progressive programming on MSNBC. And that's about free speech TV. And that's about it. Where the right seems to have a monopoly over our media. And in the case of Sinclair, they're still just starting to take over local television stations with massive doses of right-wing propaganda.
Well, Sinclair is a huge danger. The fact, one of the byproducts of the awfulness of this administration is that this FCC is the most disgraceful. Mm-hmm. That merger should be rejected out of hand. That merger never, never, never should happen. But we are looking at the corporate takeover of broadcast media, certainly, and the corporate running of cable media. So it is only going to be independent media that gives us any hope at all for something resembling a truth or anything resembling an objective truth. I am horrified that the Sinclair merger hasn't attracted more attention, but not surprised. I know that Sinclair is required, every one of their local stations is required to run these horrible propaganda pieces that are right-wing smears, that are Fox News on steroids. Mm-hmm. And they were required to run them daily. So this is a very dangerous, dangerous thing because repetition makes people believe it. I just produced an event in Miami on the 8th of February called Democracy Lives in Miami. And when I was here, Rabbi Saul Schiff, who was one of the participants in this group monologue that I directed, remembered something that I had forgotten. And he said, when Hitler first began, they thought he was a joke. That sentence out of his mouth really bothered me.
Yeah.
Because that's what the media thought about Trump, and that's why they gave him this endless filleting through the election.
Yep.
Because they thought he was a joke that could never win.
And,
well, now
and he was ratings
we're seeing
gold.
What we've got.
And he was ratings gold. I mean, CNN was shameful. They'd show, you know, the empty podium in the corner until he came on and carry every speech and every rally because of the curiosity factor, because he got ratings for them.
Yeah, and made them $100 million more in profits in the election year. That's what it's all about. We don't have editorial people now that are running these networks, the cable networks, because they are news journalists or news editors. We have the boardroom telling the news editors what they should run based on, is it getting clicks? Is it getting repeated? What's, you know, this is worse than if it bleeds, it leads, that was said in 1989. This is far worse than that. This is, if it sticks, you know, then that's all they care about. And once it sticks, they can make money with it. They all made money on Trump endlessly. And they're continuing to do it. I mean, MSNBC is all Trump all day.
Yeah.
So it's pretty disgraceful. Now, thank God, there are a few of them. And I mean a few that I really adore. Ari Melber breaks it down brilliantly every day and does a great job. Joy Reid, except when she is fomenting Democrats to fight each other in an in a Hillary Bernie battle, is doing a fantastic job.
Right.
We have to stop fighting the battle of the last election and start realizing that our country really constitutionally is built on an unsatisfactory thing, which is called compromise. Compromise is unsatisfactory to everybody. Some people can call it a win-win, but the truth is that to legislate in this country and govern properly, because that's what we really need now, we have to accept that some people are going to walk away from the table unhappy and that nobody's going to get everything they want. The question is, will the many, you know, not the few, get what they need? And that's where this country needs to now elect progressive people more than ever.
You know,
because this is the future.
It is. And we are in primary season now. This is when we get progressives elected. This is why, you know, people talk about November. No, we're in it now. Tuesday, today's the last day for early voting in Texas. Tuesday is primary day in Texas. We are off and running. And it's so important that people be paying attention now because, you know, this is it. I mean, if the Democrats don't take back the at least the House in 2018, I hate to think where we'll be by 2020. I can't even imagine at this point.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the truth of it is, I said it from the beginning. I think I said it on your show. The process of exposing this administration for the crooks they are was going to take 2 years. It will take a Democratic House to truly indict this administration.
Yep.
It will not happen in a Republican House because they live on motivated cognition. They don't believe truth. They believe a truth that keeps them sustained with each other and with their rich donors. But, you know, the truth I've been talking about now is that rich donors, whether they're Democratic donors or Republican donors, are all the same. They're rich. Mm-hmm. They made their money and they intend to keep their money. So Democratic donors are not angels just because they're Democratic donors. And Republicans raise money by extortion. You pay us and support us, and we protect you from paying high taxes, and we protect you. And it's a protection racket. It's right out of the mafia. Democrats actually raise money saying to people, give us money so we can do the right thing. Which argument do you think wins more money? This is not a no-brainer. So we've got to actually say something bigger than that. We've got to look at our donors and say, are you one of them, or are you on the side of where history is going to be? Because I promise our rich donors that when the pitchforks come out, and if we don't win in 18, the pitchforks will come out. It won't be pretty what happens when people lose hope. That's when we see violence. And the pitchforks will come out at Democratic donors' homes faster than they will at Republican homes. Hmm. Just saying.
Yeah, and you know, the Democratic Party is not helping things much. I don't know if you've been following the story of the DCCC and how they put out a hit job on this candidate in Texas, of all places, Laura Moser, because she's a progressive. You know, Howie Klein is on my show every Thursday, and there's a disturbing trend with the DCCC, most notably, going after progressives, pushing, foisting upon us the Blue Dogs and New Dems, the most conservative of the candidates, when in reality, in a primary, they should stay neutral at best. So there's a lot of and I got your point about Joy Reid fomenting discord between, you know, the Bernie and the Hillary people. That's got to stop. But we've got the party itself and the leaders within some of these factions basically doing the same thing. You and I want the most progressive Democratic Party we can get. They're saying, no, give us the conservadems. And it gets more and more difficult for me to say, after the primary season is over, you got to vote Democrat no matter what, because the alternative is what we have now. And that's untenable.
It is completely untenable at what we have now, but it is equally untenable. And I agree with you completely. If we elect people that don't represent the many is progressive. Mm-hmm. The many are people that believe in a safety net, that believe in good jobs. You know, I'm horrified. I mean, the day that they came out with their messaging platform of a better deal, Michael thought, my husband thought, I was going to explode, and we almost lost our television because I threw my shoe at it.
Oh God.
I was so angry because a better deal. Who did they pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for that piece of shit? You know, that's like, really?
That's
the deal we have now is good?
Right.
I don't think so,
number
one.
The movie, The Candidate.
And why would we use the word deal at all?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have someone in the White House who wrote a book with the word deal in it. Why would we give him the airtime? It was stupid. It was inept. And it's why I'm no longer working for, I never have, but I turned down contracts for the DCCC. I won't do it. I won't work for these people because I don't believe they have all of our common good at heart.
Right.
I believe that they're taking the easiest way out, which is to find candidates that can self-fund.
That's right.
That's the big thing, you know.
If you
can raise money, you must be a candidate. That's bullshit. What do you stand for? People do not go to the voting booth to vote against. They go to the voting booth to vote for something. We have to have a center that they vote for. And I believe that center is progressive. Mm-hmm. I believe that center gives them good jobs. I believe that center gives them universal health care. I believe that center makes them feel like the deck is not rigged against them by big corporations and big banks, and that doesn't destroy people's right to organize. That's what I believe in, and I will stay strong in that because that's what we need more than ever.
Right. No, that's exactly what we need. And the people who listen to this show, the people who are, you know, tuned in, get it. It's getting to the other people, the ones who get the fundraising emails from the DCCC, who see that they're now endorsing candidates who have A ratings from the NRA, or who for whom choice is not an issue, a woman's right to choose. These are the things that frighten me, and I don't understand why they're Democrats. If that's how they feel, you know, why not just make the change and go across the aisle and become Republicans and let the Democrats be Democrats?
Well, it is time that we held a party accountable. The Republicans are accountable only to one thing, which is their big donors. Their party is built on three tenets, and if Trump has his way, he will be a true Republican because he is only caring about the rich, number one. Number two, he is clearly got a shrine in the White House to Mars, the god of war, because he's doing everything he can to put us in war. I mean, this creating a trade war today is the stupidest thing he could possibly do. I am hoping that Gary Cohn, who used to be a conservative Democrat, has the balls to walk out of the administration because he was only there to keep him from doing the tariffs. And I believe the tariffs were, like everything with Trump, an impulse decision, nothing else. He needed to distract. The noose from Mueller is tightening around his neck. He knows it. Hope Hicks has run away because she finally couldn't take it. Well, Hope Hicks would never had a spine to begin with. Good luck in the private sector, Miss Hicks.
Right.
But I just have to say that we as Democrats have to hold our party accountable to the things we believe in. This is opportunity for all, not for some. This is, you know, e pluribus unum, you know, and that's what we really do stand for. You know, I don't understand how Democrats do this. I fight with them when I'm in Washington and I have the strength. I fight with them. Otherwise, I just leave them alone. But, you know, it's going to be very interesting. A week from today, I will be the speaker after Elizabeth Warren speaks.
Ooh.
She's opening the strategy summit.
Nice.
Which is great because that's going to be the point of view that I always make about we are a progressive country. That's in her stump speech. She'll be making that.
Mm-hmm.
I will be getting up leading the message section with Anat Shankar Osorio, who I adore.
I do too. Send her my love, please.
I will. And Celinda Lake.
Oh, wow.
And I get the first 5 minutes to talk about the fact that this is the year of women. Women are what is going to save us. It is my belief. I support women candidates before I support male candidates because I'm tired of the testosterone-driven territorial imperative that men operate on. This is craziness. We've got to get to a place of real community, and there is no one poised better to do that than the progressive women that I know. And so Women Donors Network is launching something today called Way to Win. And this is building a coalition of young people, people of color and women with a field campaign to win in states like Arizona and Texas and Florida. And this is a very interesting project, raising $100 million. Where are they spending it? Not on stupid television ads, but in the field where you really make a difference, in conversations door to door. When you empower your neighbors, believing in what you believe, you say to them, well, what are you going to do about it? And then they join and they're a volunteer and then they're out canvassing. That's what it's going to take to turn this around. Massive field work from communities. And that's what it's going to take to get millennials involved. They are the largest generation. They have every reason to vote right now, because otherwise they have no hope. A few of them will do very well. Rich ones from rich families. Oh, yeah, they'll do fine. But the rest of them? Oh, no, they don't stand a chance. They go to school. They come out in debt up to their eyeballs. Mm-hmm. They don't get a good job. And what does that mean for us? How does that make our economy better? How does that make our country better? It doesn't. It makes rich people richer. And eventually, it creates, you know, a state in which fascism can easily rise, which we're watching right now.
We are.
The gift of Trump, and I will say this honestly, the gift of Trump is that he ripped the mask of friendliness off of the fascists that live in America. He ripped that mask off. They are now who they have always been. The good news is they're not a majority. They're a minority. They are a small minority. They're not the majority. I don't believe that for a moment, no matter how loud they are. And it's time, more than ever, it is time for the majority to speak up.
Well, you know, you mentioned all the women. More women are running in this cycle than ever before in history. So we have more female candidates on the ballots than ever before. And we can probably attribute that to Trump and the outgrowth of the Women's March that also happened because of Trump. And maybe the same kind of backlash against his authoritarian leanings. I mean, when I hear him, I had a quote in What's News where it was talking about executing drug dealers.
I heard that. I was listening to you today.
It's just so frightening that, you know, the things that he's espousing that, you know, echoes of Hitler. I don't say that lightly. You don't invoke Hitler lightly, but Trump has it. I mean, the fact that he wants his Justice Department to do his bidding, to protect him, that's not what the Justice Department is there for, and he doesn't seem to understand that. This is another source of great stress for not only me, but so many listeners that I hear from, is just every day the stuff that comes out of this man's mouth or in his Twitter feed are just so disturbing that if we don't do something to get him out of there, there's genuine fear for the future of this nation.
100%. One of the things that's frightening me right now is that we're actually allowing a known anti-Semite to be laid in state at the Capitol.
I am so offensive.
Furious.
You're not the only
one. I mean, it's just horrific. You know, people can say what they want, and some people will say he was an important person in their life. That's fine. He is on tape during the Nixon administration as being an anti-Semite, and his son is far, far, far worse. The reality of this is that we are fomenting that kind of hatred through our institutions. I was enraged by that. I can't even begin to talk about that, because it made me so furious. But now with Trump, doesn't know what the Constitution is. He's a transactional president, and the transactions are all about him. And, you know, I have often said that Trump didn't learn at an early age that masturbation is not bad, but you're supposed to do it by yourself in your room, not in front of people, because that kind of defeats the purpose.
And not demand of people that they do it to you in public.
Right, exactly. Oh, he's the perfect man that wears the raincoat showing off. there's not much to show, but he shows.
Right.
And it's just disgraceful. The policies don't have any basic substance to them because he's acting transactionally in the moment. I mean, we just have to look at every one of these quote-unquote listening sessions, and we see what he's doing. He can reverse himself in a moment because he doesn't have anything to which he is attached.
Right.
And that's a scary thing. But what he is attached to is keeping that 20% of people who are fucking crazy anyway. I mean, face it, America, 20% of us is fucking lunatics. We wouldn't walk across the street to be near them. In fact, we'd move to another town to not be around these people. Mm-hmm. Those people will need him to be convicted as a crook to actually fall away a little bit. And I would bet you that 10% will still buy some form of Trump media on a monthly basis to hear his voice. I expect that. But the idea that he is trying to create this embargo, I looked at the steel embargo, the steel tariff and aluminum tariff as a way in which he's saying, well, we have to make that here. Well, what would you make that here for, and why would you want that, unless what you're trying to do is go to war and thinking you can rev up a war economy? It didn't work in 1918 when we put tariffs in. It was an enormous failure. It led to the Great Depression. This idea is so economically unsound. So where is it coming from? It's coming from the fact that, you know, this man really does believe by himself he can run the entire United States government. And it seems as though soon he will be left alone to do just that. With McMaster leaving now, which, you know, I was never a big fan.
Right.
But, you know, at least there was a voice of sanity there.
Right. And the question is, who's going to come in behind him? You know, remember,
right.
It was Flynn before.
Reality speaking, I'm sorry, John Kelly has proved that he's a racist.
Yes.
John Kelly is not an even-handed, clear-thinking general. He's a racist and an authoritarian.
Yep. Just
and he's
like
just
boss.
Trying to make everything, you know, he is what they used to call the good Germans.
Oh, God.
And that's a frightening thought to think about.
So
this cast of characters is scary to me, and I see the implosion coming sooner than later. I mean, there was an article today I read. Someone said, not since Nixon walking around talking to the portraits has any president been left so alone in the White House.
Right. I think I saw the same thing. So how do we navigate the waters? I mean, it is a matter of waiting for him to implode and bring the nation down with him? Or the way I look at it is the first step is taking back the House in 2018 by the Democrats, as flawed as they may be, because it's our best because they have subpoena power. They can hold hearings.
Right.
They can get stuff done.
Right. We must get politically active on our side. We have to unify, focus, and organize. I call it my UFO school of winning. Unify, focus, organize. That's what we have to do if we want this back. And we have to do it right now, and we have to do it every day. You do it every day in your radio broadcast. People need to share your radio broadcast. They need to remind people that there is Nicole Sandler, there's Laura Flanders, there's Amy Goodman, there's Ari Melber. I mean, even Nicole Wallace is speaking this.
Yes, she is.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
Nicole Wallace is horrified. Not someone that was going to be at the top of my list of policy people I wanted to talk to.
Not at all.
Because we don't agree on much.
Right.
But on small d democracy, we completely agree.
Yeah, I think
and
some.
And she's horrified.
Some of the more powerful voices speaking out against Trump are voices that were very right-leaning, that still are in their policies, but they're horrified by what's going on. I think there are alliances to be made there before it's too late.
Well, there are. And the reality is we need to build this right now. So you're 100% right. Taking back the House, but also taking back state houses.
Yes.
I am proud to say that I am supporting Andrew Gillum for governor in Florida.
Yes.
I mean, let me tell you, he is fantastic. And I've known him now for 15 years. We worked together when he was just out of college. He is a formidable thinker. When he stands with students and against gun violence, he's not doing it because he's an opportunistic candidate. That's what he did when he stood up against Jeb Bush when he was in college.
Great. Hey, Joel, we're running out of time real quick. You'll have to introduce me to Andrew so I can get him on the show.
I will. He's fantastic. I adore him.
All right. Joel Silberman, it's so great to hear from you. I know my listeners are loving hearing from you today. Thank you so much for coming on, and I will see you tomorrow and give you a great big hug.
I can't wait to see you.
All right.
Be well.
You too.
Bye.
And bye-bye. I'll talk to you later. Joel Silberman, you can follow him on Twitter @Joel Silberman and his Facebook group @TeamJoel.